Isn't that fascinating? Well, okay, let's now talk a little bit about not only the house, but the minds that were at play inside that home. What was Mr. Olcott thinking when he started a school? What was going on there?
Mr. Olcott was fortunate to have a brilliant, loving mother who thought learning was just the most important thing. Her brother, Tillotson Bronson, that was the maiden name of his mother, by the way, and it was actually his middle name. He liked going by his middle name, too. His real first name was Amos. So Amos Bronson Olcott had a mother whose maiden name was Bronson, Anna Bronson. Her brother, Tillotson Bronson, had gone to Yale, was very well educated, became the headmaster of a school in Connecticut, and he, as many young men would do of that era, he shared with his sister his education.
Really? I never knew that.
It was not uncommon if there was a good relationship and if there was the opportunity and if the young lady wanted that information, because of course, some women longed for the education, and they absolutely had no option to get it from a school. Schools, colleges were not accepting women, and the only way they could get that kind of education was from a private source, their brother, perhaps a father in some cases. It was difficult, but many women did it, and of course, it was just private for them. I mean, they didn't have a degree, they didn't have any way of having a position granted them from their education, but they wanted it because they just longed to learn. And Anna Bronson was that way. So she immediately had a very wonderful kinship with her oldest son, Bronson, Amos Bronson. She could tell he had that same love of learning at a very young age. And she took him under her wing, and he thrived. Now, he did not have a lot of formal education. There weren't too many opportunities. They lived in a place called Spindle Hill in Wolcott, Connecticut. And he did, for a time, go to the Cheshire Academy, which was where his uncle was headmaster. But those boys were quite polished compared to Bronson, and he felt very ill at ease there. His clothes weren't right. His speech was funny. He was from the country, and a lot of them were not. And it was difficult for him, so he did not stay there very long. And most of his education really was what we would today call self-education. But he loved it and worked hard and was very dismayed by how some of the public school teachers, really probably, I'm guessing, all of the public school teachers in that era were much more concerned with showing the students that they were in charge and making sure that the behavior was just so. You sit up straight, you observe silence, you know, children should be seen and not heard. You do not ask questions in the classroom. That would be rude. That would be impudent. The teacher knows what you need to know. And you just sit there and be quiet. And when you're called upon to stand up and recite the lesson that you have memorized, you do so, and then you sit down. If you don't understand the lesson, well, maybe you're not bright enough to be in school. You certainly don't go and ask a question. So Bronson Olcott, observing this manner of teaching, and because he loved learning so much, started to just think, isn't there a better way? And when he was old enough to have a school himself, he began to teach very differently. He allowed questions in the classroom. He did things that today we would call field trips. He took children out and showed them things directly. He thought that children should be observed, and they would help the teacher know how to teach. This was completely revolutionary thinking. And his entire life, this was a topic that interested him. On the fireplace in his study in Orchard House, his daughter, May, she's the one, remember, who is Amy in Little Women. Amy is quite the artist. And in real life, May Olcott was an even better artist than you would guess from reading Little Women. May Olcott painted the words that her father loved to live by. And I will recite these words for you, but before I do, I should tell you to imagine God's hands creating the universe, because that's the image that is evoked in these words. And remember that when we say to rear, it means to bring up. So with that, here is the quotation above the fireplace in Mr. Olcott's study in Orchard House. The hills are reared. The seas are scooped in vain. If learning's altar, vanish from the plain. And really, lifelong learning is what he's talking about. You're never too young and you're never too old.
So did this outlook draw a ton of students to him? Was this received well? And is this how he supported his family?
It's how he attempted to support his family. But he would not compromise his vision for the sake of earning money. And these were private schools. He would start up a school. You know, he'd announce that he was having school. Initially, people were excited, but it seemed inevitably to be the case that after a time, there were people thinking, wait a minute, this is going a little bit too far. You mean you never beat the children? They're going to be spoiled. Mr. Olcott, what, questions in the classroom? That seems a little, I mean, you can't just let them pipe up whenever they have a question. And he did maintain discipline. It wasn't a free-for-all. They raised their hands, or they probably wouldn't just raise their hand. They would stand up to indicate that they had a question and wait to be called upon. So there was certainly order. But this was very revolutionary. And also, he did things like have a little girl that in those days they would call a negress. Today we just say a little black child. She was poor. Her family was poor. They didn't have money. He had her come in for free, thinking that she would be a charity pupil, but this was important to admit her. Well, there were people, even abolitionist parents, who said slavery should be abolished, who said, yes, but she shouldn't be in school with our children. And if you allow her to stay, I'm taking my child out. And he would not dismiss her. He would keep her and lose other pupils. So things like this, there were many, many different things, many different reasons. By today's standards, we would say he was right, but he was a little too far ahead of his time, and he was not good at negotiating that narrow path that you really sometimes have to walk if you're trying to be innovative but also bring people along with you who don't agree with you.
Listen, it's a fine art in the 21st century.
Yes, I think you're absolutely right.
That's an amazing story. I can't, I was dying to know the history of that young black child, but I'd be interested to know whatever happened to her education.
That's a really good question, too. I don't personally know, but I would love to find out. Maybe I will someday, and we'll have to talk again.
You must. We'll help you down here in Chapel Hill. One of the things that profoundly changed my understanding of this whole story, Jan, was what you said about how Anna Bronson got her education to begin with. It was shared from brother to sister, if they were so inclined. And that is a hallowed concept, because so many opportunities are shared between siblings. And it's, I think, an untold story. I think her brother, Tillotson Bronson, was way ahead of his thinking and time. He recognized that curiosity and learning is not necessarily tied or tethered to gender, and how powerful a loving and brilliant mother can be in shaping the next generation.
Absolutely. And this was something that was so ingrained now in Bronson Olcott, because of that experience with his mother. He absolutely passed that along, because, again, in his schools, there was no sense that the boys were more important, the girls could have a separate kind of education. He treated them absolutely equally. That was also true when he had them go out for something he called recess, which was also a new concept. And physical activity for girls was discouraged in that era. Girls could sit there and do their needlework or do some other nice little quiet thing. Boys were allowed to run and climb trees. But the Olcotts, both Mr. and Mrs. Olcott, I haven't talked too much about Marmee yet. They really did call their mother Marmee. But they both agreed on these principles that Bronson Olcott, that I've been talking about, that Bronson Olcott had. And their girls were brought up to be close and loving. That sibling relationship was encouraged, but they were also allowed to really be individuals. This, again, was something that was not a common concept, that, you know, if a young girl wanted to run, that she was discouraged, but not in the Olcott family. And Louisa May Olcott said, "I love to run. It's such a joy to run. I think I might have been a deer or a horse in some former existence because I like to run so much."
Talk about a young woman ahead of her time.
Yeah, really. And she loved to write. She loved to read. She read everything. She was a voracious reader. She loved to make up stories. In Little Women, people know very often that the girls are putting on a theatrical production for Christmas. They're so poor they don't have money to buy Christmas presents. So the present is going to be a theatrical, and it's Rodrigo. Joe is playing the role of this dashing young man because it's just her sisters and herself. There are no boys, so she takes the boy part, and she wears the pantalettes, and she has a big mustache that she's pasted on her upper lip, and she's made some grand boots that steal the show, she says in Little Women. She was doing this all the time. And by the way, those boots still sit in the little costume trunk they had. You can see those very boots in Orchard House. But just to go on, she did all this creating of little plays and little short stories, and she was just doing this for fun as a child. And as she got older and more serious about her writing, she came up against those who would say, "This is not ladylike. Young ladies should not be encouraged to do this sort of thing. It's fine to write letters. That's a lovely, proper thing to do. But stories and books and, you know, that was looked down upon. There were women doing it, but they were sometimes doing it under pen names or doing it just to be very brave and sometimes criticized. And certainly if you're a young girl still under the influence of your parents, the parents would be told, certainly, this isn't proper. And the physicians had come up finally with the proof, the medical proof, that writing, which is brain work, any brain work, would destroy a woman's health. This was something that certain physicians, I don't know if they all thought that, but certain physicians had made this widely known. And here was Bronson Olcott absolutely flying in the face of that attitude. He built Louisa May Olcott a desk of her own, and Marmee gave her a pen with the little inscription on paper next to the pen: "May this pen your muse inspire when wrapped in pure poetic fire." So here are parents encouraging something that other people would have thought was just wrong.